Welcome to the teaching ministry of North Coast Church at Vista, California. We invite you to please open your Bibles as we join Pastor Chris Brown for today's message.
Oh, it gets old after a while. It's the little words. It's the little actions that go with it that just get under your skin. And it's one after another after another until year after year they build up. And something has to happen. Before he came into the system, it was typical. I mean, there were checks and balances. There was the normal give and take. But once he showed up, everything changed. A whole new script was written. And that's what they can't deal with. If you're one of those siblings that tends to count Christmas presents to see who got more, oh, you're frustrated every year. He's got far more presents under the tree with his name on it than anybody else. Anytime things are split up and there's always a big piece, you don't even have to ask where it goes. It's always served to him. Dad ever comes into the room and somebody's crying or something went wrong, he's never to blame. In fact, he's always protected. Anytime Dad goes anywhere, he gets to ride shotgun. Dad always brings up special little things from trips and gives it to him and no one else. And there comes a point in time where the family's had enough and things are going to break. And today we get ushered into that scene, into that family system where you got so many siblings, 12 brothers. I mean, right there, you got a tough system. But when this one showed up, everything changed. And today, everything breaks. And today, we shift gears, and we watch the family that had conflict turn to chaos. It may just remind you of your family, and yet my bet is they go way above and beyond. Anything you ever have done with your siblings or your family, this one may just make you feel good about the home you have or grew up in. So if you're with us today, we're in the very first book of the Bible, Genesis. We're in chapter 37. The gears are going to slow down tremendously at this point. We're going to focus on one guy's life. The Bible wants to make it clear. He is a favorite set apart like none other. And that is going to blow this thing out of the water. And we're also going to slow down and examine a life chapter by chapter more than any other. Joseph is now the story of Genesis. It'll take up the last quarter of the book, 25% of Genesis. 13 chapters are given to this guy. Catch that. 13 chapters of Genesis are devoted to Joseph. Now, just think about that. The beginning of the Bible wants to let us know there is a God, there is a creator, and it shows God as creator. It takes two chapters to talk about God creating. Joseph gets 13 chapters. That's pretty amazing. If in the Old Testament there's ever two people that you can look at and go, they're pretty much blameless. Two people you want to pattern your life after, there's only really two guys that show up on scene that do things right. Joseph and Daniel. And we always said, Daniel wrote his own book, so you got to kind of put an asterisk by it. Because it's like, if Chris Brown gets to write the book of Chris Brown, I look pretty dang good. If someone else writes the truth of Chris Brown, we don't want to read that book. And so we got Joseph. And yet at the start, he is going to stub his toe big time. He's going to make some mistakes. I don't know if they're sin or not. They're mistakes that are going to cost him. And we get to see 110 years of this guy's life. 13 chapters, almost as if God's been saying, up to chapter 37, we've got a great view of God, his plan, how he wants to work in the lives of people. We've been touching down every 20, 30, 50, sometimes we skip hundreds of years. Now it comes to a stop. One guy, one life for the next 20 years. We're going to look at for 13 chapters. Almost as if to say, now here's what it all looks like in your life and my life. Here's what it looks like in the dark times and the obstacles and the roadblocks. Because if this is the way God dealt with people then, this is the way he deals with people today. We got a lot to learn from him. So we're in Genesis chapter 37. You got a Bible, open it. You got something to turn on and find it. Click on it. Turn the volume off. Here we go. Oh, and as we jump in, let me just tell you. There's some of you neurotic note takers that right now your heart is beating and you're starting to sweat and you want to raise your hand, even though you're in a venue and I can't see you. You're in a different campus, Fallbrook or Carlsbad. And you're like, we skipped chapter 36. Does anyone realize we just skipped chapter 36? We can't do that. We're going chapter by chapter. Let me just tell you, we're skipping chapter 36. Chapter 36 is one of those chapters. If you can't go to bed at night, read this part of the Bible. You're out in 9 verses. It's what we call the genealogy. Who had the sons of and the sons of and the sons of and who begat and who begat and who begat? And you're like, what? Let me just give you a flavor of it. Chapter 36, let's start at verse 22. This is what it does for 40 verses. The sons of Lotan, Hori and Homam and Timnah and Lotan's sister, the sons of Shobal, Alvin and Manathah and Ebel and Shepho and Anam, the sons of Zibeon, Ahi and Anna, and this is the Anna who discovered the hot springs in the desert while he was grazing the donkeys of his father. The children of Anna, Dishon and Olabim and daughters of Anna, the sons of Dishon, Himnah, Eshban. It goes like that for 40 verses. I'm not going to teach on that. The only break in all these names is some guy that discovers the hot springs. And I'm like, am I going to do a whole message on the first guy that opened a spa? And I have nothing to do with that. And so we're skipping chapter 36. And yet some of you out there are going, well, I don't get it. It's in the Bible. Why is it in the Bible? Why has God put it there? Yeah. So chapter 37, we're going to look. Maybe here's why. Remember, this is written by Moses. After God has just wreaked havoc on Egypt, the greatest empire in the known world, brought the plagues, opened the Red Sea, brought the children of Israel back to the promised land. They've been in captivity for 400 years there. Maybe this chapter is just a reminder of the generations and generations and generations that come from Esau, the brother that got cheated out, the other side of the family where the conflict is happening. Maybe this is just Moses' way of letting the people know the land we're going back to has a ton of people groups and descendants. And they're not going to like you very much. And here's their history. And I want you to know, as we're about to go back into the land, we're going to have conflict with a lot of people. And I want to remind you just where they come from, where the rift happened in the family, and why we're going to face some battles and conflict. I think that's why chapter 36 is there. Just to remind you, here's the last 400 years. It's almost as if to say, there's some stuff in your family and there's stuff in your history that you're still going to deal with. And you're like, why is this going on? How come we got this conflict? And there's chapter 36 in their life just to go, remember back then when you did this? There's consequences. You're still dealing with the consequences that go all the way back to an Esau in your life. So you're going to have a challenging road ahead. So we covered chapter 36. Chapter 37, verse 1. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, in the land of Canaan. Now this is the account of Jacob, or this was the account. We've been reading his life. That's it. And now we find a new character. Joseph, a young man of 17. You see, he was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. Not a great way to bring a hero on the scene, I may add. New character for 13 chapters. We're going to look at his life. His name's Joseph. When he was 17, he was a tattletale. Not the way you want your story to be started, is it? But it's setting us up for the conflict to happen. See, there were days where you come in from the field. There were days where you came in and gave your dad a report about the livestock. Now remember, this guy Jacob, he also goes by Israel. He's got 12 sons. They've got a ton of livestock. The family business is huge. And the boys come in from that and dad wants a report. How are we doing? What's the quarterlies? And the sons are telling them, we're doing pretty good. The birthing's up this year. We're able to keep most of the young. We've kept wild animals away. We found good grazing. We got good water. This looks like it's going to be a great year, Pop. Anything else? No, I think that's it. And all of a sudden, little boy clears. I can tell you some things. These guys, when they're out there, Dad, they're getting drunk at night. They're growing their own back in the field. They get women from the other towns out there. And the brother's like, really? That's a book of children? Seriously? Why do you got to go there? Because I'm Joseph. You got one of those? I grew up with one of those. Now, he had a lot to tell on with my life, but that's not the point. They don't got to know what I was doing. Did you come in last night when you told you? Yes, I did. Dad, it was way after 2 before Chris got him. Shut up. Seriously? Oh, it gets better. Now, Israel, the dad, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated, circle, highlight, underline, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. This is the relationship in the family. He was born in dad's old age. Dad thought he was done having boys. And by the way, once you have 10 sons, you're probably done having boys. But his old wrinkly age, he got another son. And this came from dad's favorite wife. And if that doesn't sound right to you, it shouldn't. Anytime you have to have a favorite wife, you've got conflict in the home. Anytime you have to decide between spouses, you have spouses too many. It should be clear. Who's your favorite spouse? Well, I got one. Good. End of discussion. You got one. Dad had multiple wives and concubines. Favorite wife, in his old wrinkly age, way beyond he thought he was going to have kids, actually brought out Joseph. Oh, this is dad's favorite. The other boys are grown. The other boys are doing the family business. In his old age, when dad gets to slow down, when he's not out working in the field anymore, he's at home getting reports. In his retirement age, where he's got far more time to spend, who would have thought he'd have a little man? Joey. Got me, Joey. Guys, come in. Come again. God's blessed us. I didn't think I was going to have any more sons. I got Joey. I just want the rest of you kids to know. Man, that's my favorite. I love him so much more than you guys. You guys can go now. And it's so evident in the home. They hated the kid. Okay, first side note on this. I love at North Coast, we got so many young families. It is just crazy. You cannot walk by the nursery, children's, kindergarten, first grade class without, there's kids stacked on top of each other like Legos right now. We are packed with little critters. You guys are being so biblical. I love it. And so with that though, so many of us right now are starting into this stage. Let me just give a word of advice. Why is Jacob an idiot when it comes to having favorite kids? You don't do that. Because his dad was an idiot in this department. Remember? Jacob's a twin. Dad and mom, they had Jacob and Esau. Dad loved Esau. The hairy dude, got fur on his chest by the time he was 7. Boy, that's dad's boy. Varsity, 4 letters in freshman year, 4 different sports. That's dad's boy. Jacob was mommy's boy, mommy's favorite. And the Bible said, if you remember weeks ago, mom and dad played favorites all the way up into their 50s with their kids. Why does his dad show favoritism like that? Because grandpa had favorites. Grandpa had an Ishmael and an Isaac. Oh, grandpa in his old age had an Isaac. Loved Isaac so much, he kicked Ishmael out of the house because there was competition there. Having a bad family pattern, young parents, is not an excuse to continue a bad family pattern. There are ways our families have done things that we go, well, that's the way my dad did it. Well, you didn't like it, did you? So knock it off. And yet the human heart at time has favorites, don't we? There just seems to be one kid. Maybe he's more like you. And that's my, oh, he's like my little dude. He thinks like me, throws like me, does the curveball. He's only 4. This is amazing. My little dude. And then there's that one. Maybe it's the one that's like you that you butt heads with. Why? Because they're a little you. And the world's only big enough for one of you. And you created another. And there's a constant battle going on with maybe the little. Maybe the other one's like your spouse. You got one that's like your, oh, and the love for your spouse. And now there's a little, she's just like your mama. I love this little girl. And then there's him. Him. And there is a human heart and condition for so many of us that just tend to be drawn when you have multiple kids to go, oh, this one. Parents, let's be careful there. Now, I know some of you are so godly. You're like, I love all my children equally. That's great. Most of us don't. And so there tends to be. There tends to be one that you just go, that's it. Oh, it hit me this week. I've always talked openly about I have favorites. I tell every kid they're my favorite, and we do it all the time. It's kind of the Brown thing. Well, this week, when I came home from work about 4 or 5 days ago, the little guy met me at the door. He's 7. Met me, hugged me. We're sitting down. I go, how's your day? How's good? They're ending up school and everything. And he's all, Dad, who's really your favorite? And I'm like, you are. And he goes, I know, but really, really. So I look both ways and I go, okay, just between me and you. And his eyes got big. He's being let in on something. He goes, yeah. I go, who's my only boy? And he goes, that's me. And I go, you're my favorite son. And he starts walking away and then he's all. And I'm all, that's right. Because my oldest knows she's my favorite big girl. My middle one, though, she's my favorite little girl. He knows he's my favorite boy. It's okay to play favorites as long as they're all favorites. It's okay to give something to one. But if you bring ice cream home, it can't go to one. Parents, good parents know everything has to be cut into thirds. And the one who complains the loudest gets the last pick. So don't complain when I cut stuff into thirds. It's tough to cut one ice cream ball into thirds. We're going to do our best here. If you take one out on a date night, make sure the others get date night. If there's special attention to one, make sure there's special attention to others. If there's a nickname for one, make sure there's a nickname for others. And then it's got to be equal. You can't go, well, Chris, I have Cutie Pie and Sweetie and Stupid, and they all got nicknames. It's like, no, they're gonna figure that out. Jacob doesn't get it because his dad didn't get it. His dad didn't get it because grandpa didn't get it. What's amazing to me is he loves Joseph more than all the other boys, and the boys hate Joseph. And it's dad. Dad's the source of the conflict, but the boys hate Joseph. My bet is in our campuses and our venues today with the crowd we have, there are a lot of us that still have animosity towards a sibling because mom and dad played favorites. Mom and dad helped them out more financially. Mom and dad gave to their tuition. Mom and dad paid for college and wouldn't even get you a car. Mom and dad paid for their schooling and their doctor degree and wouldn't bail you out. And it's whatever it is. Okay, little inside information. But whatever it is, we're not mad at mom and dad as much. It's animosity toward the sibling. Jacob's created in his own home. Now what Joseph does with it, I don't have much explanation for it. Verse 5, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, listen to this dream I just had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field. Suddenly, my sheaf rose up. It stood upright. Your sheaves all gathered around mine, and they bowed down to it. Isn't that cool?
I'll show you cool.
His brother said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule over us? And they hated him all the more. Third time that's mentioned. Because of his dream and what he had said. Okay. I got to give Joseph a little bit of grace here. He's a 17-year-old. He's 17 going on 12. He's a spoiled kid. He's daddy's favorite. Daddy gave him a robe just to say favorite on it. A richly ornamented robe. Some of you, if you grew up in church going to Sunday school, you're like, oh, Joseph in the coat of many colors. I know this story. Others of you more musically inclined are like, oh, the Technicolor dream coat. I know this story. However you got it, it's like, this is that story. And in the midst of it, he comes out to his brothers who hate him, who can't speak a kind word to him, and goes, guys, I had this amazing dream. We're out bundling up all the sheaves of grain. Mine just stood up, bling. Yours all came around and started bowing down to it. Isn't that amazing? What do you expect him to say? It's just low EQ. He just doesn't get it. He's acting like a typical teenager and an immature teenager at that. And he doesn't know how to handle his dreams at this point. And he does it once, and I kind of shrug my shoulders and go, oh, that was dumb. But now you know the looks on their faces. My bet is you won't make that mistake again. Verse 9. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said, I just had another dream. And this time, the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. Forget sheaves of grain. Now it's me. I'm standing there. The sun and the moon and 11 stars. Who could that represent? My 11 brothers are all bowing down to me. Isn't that an amazing dream? Now, I don't know what it is about these dreams. Maybe you've had some of these before where you wake up in the morning. You're like, oh, my gosh, that was real. Did that just happen? Something's going to come. And you swear it was a dream that actually, it's different than weird dreams. I get weird dreams all the time. You don't want to know about them. But there's certain dreams that stick out. And you're like, oh, I think that's going to happen. I think that's from God. I think I'm supposed to do that. And he said, Chris, what dreams are from God? One aren't. I'll tell you 20, 30 years from now, if it comes true, whether it was God or not. I've had dreams that I thought were so God, such thing. You got to buy the lotto. Here's what you got to do. Here's what you do with the money. And I'm like, God's going to make me win the lotto. And then didn't win anything. And I'm like, what was that about? Man, I thought that was God. I don't know about dreams. Here's what I know. I tend to see what God does in the rearview mirror, not the windshield. I'll go through life and go, wow, that's what that was about. Or I'll go through life and go, I'm not eating a carne asada burrito right before bed again. That was crazy. He woke up. He's so sure this is from God. He's got to share it with his brothers. They hate him. He does it a second time. Oh, now they hate him. This time, dad gets in on the rebuke. Verse 10. So he went and told his father as well as his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said, what's this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this matter in mind. The only guy he has in his corner right now is dad. And now dad's like, hey boy, shut up. We're tired of hearing the dreams. You think mom and I are actually going to come down and bow down before you? Zip it. And yet dad kept these things in mind. It's a weird statement, isn't it? I flew right by it the first few times. And yet dad kept these things in mind. Dad kept these. Why? Dad's had dreams before. God's come and spoke to dad before. God got dad back on track through dreams before. God's called dad back home and how to lead this family through dreams before. And I wonder if dad's thinking, maybe God's doing something with the boy. Now, the kid's an idiot right now, but maybe God's doing something with the boy. Here's the problem. Dad hasn't raised his boys on how to handle the things of God. Dad doesn't have a relationship with Joey where he pulls him in and says, kid, here's how you handle giftedness. Here's what you do with spirituality. Here's how you handle people in your life. Right now, God may or may not be doing something in you, but everybody wants to kill you. So whether it's God or not, you're doing it wrong. Dad doesn't seem to draw the line and say, here's how we do things. And once again, when dad doesn't draw the line for the family gets to draw their own lines. And the boys are going to take off and run with it. Now, it's the first time in the Bible, the first time in the book of Genesis, God shows up in a dream and doesn't directly talk to someone. It's the first time God just gives these pictures of here's what's going to happen. And here's what happens. Now his brothers had gone to graze their flocks near Shechem. Oh, we've heard of that place before. Nothing good ever comes from Shechem. Shechem's got some bad juju in just the last few chapters. Shechem's where dad first moved. He stopped short of the will of God because he wanted to be close to the world. Shechem. Their sister got raped in Shechem. All kinds of immorality happening in Shechem. The brothers went and destroyed Shechem. But the brothers went back near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them. Very well, he replied. And so he said to him, go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me. Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. And when Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering out in the fields. And he asked him, hey, what are you looking for? And he replied, I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks? Oh, they moved on from here, the man answered. I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him. Let's throw him into one of these cisterns. Let's say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. Now, this took the family conflict to a whole different level. I was that guy that always ticked off brothers and sisters. If my three brothers and sisters were fighting about anything, it was always me. I was always the guy running for my life from one of them because I deserved it. I always had an older brother behind me going, I'm going to kill you. Those were the words they used. Now, in my mind, I knew they're not going to kill me. They're going to hurt me, kill me. They're going to grab me and throw me down. They're going to put their knees on my shoulders and pin my arms underneath them. They're going to take their knuckles and they are going to ram my chest until I squeal. And when I squeal, they're going to slowly spit in my face and mouth while that happens. I know, I didn't deserve any of it. And that's what it was going to be like. I was the one, if anyone was fighting, they're always fighting with me because I was such a jerk. I know you can't picture that now, but I used to be. And so my mouth got me into so much trouble. And I always had a brother, sister, someone saying they're going to kill me. My job was to run to an open door. It's hard to corner you when you're outside. I was pretty quick in the day. Or run to mom and dad. Those were the two bases. Everything else is an unsafe zone. This is kill him, kill him. And this changes the story from what Sunday school taught me. See, the problem of hearing these stories in Sunday school is they usually give you a picture to color to go along with it. That's what you do to first graders. And the problem is, most first grade printouts, the kids in the story look just like you. Joseph is a little guy, and you get to color his coat, and he's got all these little brothers around him, and he tells him his dream. And it messed up my picture of this story. Because I had a picture of Joey coming downstairs. He's got his PJs with the footies on him and the zipper that comes all the way up to the neck. And he comes downstairs. His hair's all messed up. All of his brothers are at one great big breakfast table. There's like 12 bowls of Captain Crunch all the way down the table. All these boys are in their PJs. And Joe's, guess what, guys? I had a dream and you're all going to bow down to me. And his brothers don't like him. That was my picture growing up. What I love about going through books of the Bible chapter by chapter is context. None of these are boys. Joey came in his father's really old age. His brothers have been around for 40 years, 30 years. They're men. What type of men? If you were here last week, two of them, Simeon and Levi, tricked an entire town into circumcising themselves and then massacred every man in town. These are the type of guys you're ticking off. They're murderers and thieves. Your oldest brother, Reuben, in the last chapter, slept with one of your dad's wives just to prove to everyone else he's alpha dog in the family because dad's getting old. These are the type of men, not boys. He keeps spouting off to. They hate him, hate him, hate him. And in a distance, they see him come, his little coat radiating in the Middle Eastern sun. And they're like, are you kidding me? He wore that thing out here? Two things have got to come into their head. Why wasn't he out in the field in the first place? Why does this kid get time off? We're out busting our butt in the Middle Eastern sun. We're the one doing the family business. You've been at home, and now you come out in a coat like that. You wear a coat like that out here, you're just telling us you ain't about to get dirty. You're just telling us you're not going to work. And you're wearing the favorite sign out here? Man, we hate you. Don't you hate that guy? 10 little voices, hate that kid. Let's kill the kid. I'll kill him. Will you really? Yeah, you. I'll kill him. I thought I was the only one thinking that. Seriously, we'll all kill him. We'll kill him. And do what? Throw him into a hole. Woo. Your family starts seeing a little better now, doesn't it? Some of you are like, no, my family tried to kill me too. It's like, okay. Well, at least you're biblical. Kill him. Throw him into a hole. And just when you think it's done with Joseph's saga, we find the most unlikely of heroes. Most unlikely. And then he doesn't quite pull it off. Verse 21. When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Hey, let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Okay, let's throw him into the cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe that he was wearing. They took him and they threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. And I got to give Reuben, he's the oldest brother, about half credit on this. Someone needed to take a stand. It's him. But he comes short of stopping what needed to happen. And Reuben so far, this guy's been a moron in the books. Remember, he's the guy that just committed incest with one of his father's concubines. This is a gross story. Dad knows about it, by the way. I don't know if it's guilt. I don't know if it's an older brother thing. My bet is that's what it is. My bet is Joseph's going to die. They're going to come home. Dad's going to go, what happened? And he's going to blame some. Who does he blame? Oldest brother. Reuben realized this is going to fall on me. Later on in chapter 49, at Jacob's dying, he gives a brother each blessing and he calls Reuben. He says, you are might, you are power, you are strength. You are like turbulent waters. It's a cool picture for a man, isn't it? He's like, you're like the Tasmanian devil. If there was one person that could probably change the mind of this crowd, it was Reuben. He's oldest. He seems to be the biggest and strongest. He's a wild dude. You don't want to mess with Reuben. And as all the brothers are talking about killing him, Reuben finally gets a heart. Guys, I don't think we should cause any bloodshed. Then I think he sees the looks of his brothers and realizes his choice is going to make him very unpopular. He really wants to save Joseph. But the crowd he doesn't want to lose. I mean, we can still put him in the cistern, in brackets, because he secretly wanted to come back and get him out and save him. We can still put him in the cistern, but let's just not kill him for now. And Reuben, you had the right motives, you had the right desire, but you didn't have the right timing and action. Reuben was afraid of the crowd and he couldn't go through with it. Reuben, you should have stopped right there and said, guys, I hate him too. You're going to hate me for this. We're not going to do it. We're just not going to do it. I'm going to go talk to him. And he should have walked down that hill. He should have grabbed the boy in the valley. Joseph, we hate your guts. You got two choices. You can come up with the brothers and they're going to kill you. Or you can go back home to dad right now and never get out here again. That should have been the conversation. By the way, I'm giving you a 20-minute head start. Then I'm letting them loose on you. Gets. Church, there's a right time and place to do things. And if we fail to react in the right time, we may never get that opportunity again. And Reuben is never going to get that opportunity again. And we're going to watch over the next few weeks for 20 years. He is going to live with the guilt of, I should have done something then. And because he's afraid of the crowd, he can't pull it off. And I want to point that off because we're going to come back and talk about this right here at the very end of it. And they throw him in a cistern. Now, here's again where I didn't understand this. Here's again where I thought the well was. You know the Jack and Jill well? It's a circle of red bricks and it's got the two little poles and a little lean-to and it's got a bucket on a little crank. That's a well. I had the fairy tale well in mind. A couple weeks ago when we were at the group in Israel, we all got to go down inside a cistern. Changed this story forever in my mind. Didn't realize that as little rainfall as there is in the Middle East, they would find places where the water tends to run when there is rain. Because the hills are so dry, they don't soak up water. When it rains, they shed water. It's like a fast flash flood. You got to find ways to catch water and catch it quick. So they'll find runoff areas from the hillsides here. They'll dig through the limestone. Very easy to be able to dig through. Small hole, and once they get down, they'll make a big cave as they can. Smooth walls, nice and cool inside. They'll make a cavern, small hole on top, to try to hold as much water as possible because you don't know when you're going to get water again. 50 of us got inside one of the cisterns. It was excavated from the side so we could climb down and get in. We could have fit another 50 of us inside. In fact, it's taken with my iPhone, so it came out really bad because we're in the pitch dark. This is me in just one part of one of the cisterns. It's huge. The ceiling's at least 15 feet above my head. And when you walk to the middle and look up, here's the hole. 25 feet above you. There is no way to get out of this thing. They take their brother and shove him down inside. He can break his fall by putting his arms out. The hole's always small, so evaporation can't take place. But he falls and hits bottom. He looks up. You realize without help, you're a dead man. And he's there. And as he's wondering where the hopes and dreams for his life have gone, the story takes the twist. As they sat down to eat, in verse 25, as they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. And their camels were loaded with spices, balm, myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. And Judah said to his brothers, hey, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Finally, a voice of reason. As if over dinner, they hear the cries of their brother out of the pit and Judah. Wouldn't you expect it to be Judah? A couple weeks ago, we talked about Judah. Judah being the line of Christ. Judah were the line of kings for Israel. David and those are going to come from. Now you're like, finally, someone gets a God voice and it's Judah. Hey guys, I don't think we should kill our brothers. Good motive. Quickly turn to wrong action. Watch where he goes with it. What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Verse 27, come, let's just sell him to the Ishmaelites, not lay a hand on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. Hey, what if we don't kill him? But what if we sell him as a slave to these guys really cheap and we can all go into Shechem and get Slurpees? I mean, after all, he is our brother. And this is where they go. And this is what's done. And when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of that cistern and they sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. Can you imagine the scene? Can you imagine 17-year-old Joseph? Come on, guys, we're not doing this. Come on, guys, it'll never happen again. Guys, you're nowhere going to sell me. I don't think they got him tied. They got him gagged or whatever. And they're telling the guys, see what we have to deal with? Good luck with this guy. Take him. Pleading, begging, brothers, 20 pieces of silver. Slightly short of what Christ got sold out for. The price of a mature slave, about 30 pieces of silver at this time. Oh, it was cheap. For a 17-year-old healthy kid, they sold him cheap. Get him out of our life. And when Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, the boy isn't there. Where can I turn now? Oh, that statement screams, where can I turn now? When we refuse to take a step of obedience, when obedience is necessary, there's no other place to turn. When we refuse to do the right thing at the right time, we don't get another opportunity. What can I do now? Well, nothing. You had a choice. You chose the wrong thing. You just got to live with that. Yeah. But what can I do now? Nothing. You had a moment where you could choose to do the right thing, the things of God, or choose to go along with the crowd. You were afraid of the crowd, so you lost the opportunity. Yeah. But what can I do now? Nothing. There's no place to turn now. When we sin, there's two choices. We can repent. Oh, that's the hard thing to do. We can find forgiveness and freedom, or we can try to cover it up. And human nature always tries to cover it up. And that's exactly what they do. So they got Joseph's robe. They slaughtered a goat. They dipped the robe in blood. They took the ornamented robe back to their father and said, we found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe or not. It's a sick scene. Oh, the horror. Every parent's worst nightmare. To get that phone call, that time where someone needs to examine the evidence or the body and realize, that was my boy. And the sons are there presenting the coat, the richly ornamented coat that they've shredded and dipped in blood. Dad, do you think this is the one you gave to Joseph? Oh, you know. This wasn't some typical Billabong hoodie they found out in the wilderness. This is his coat. And to watch your dad hit that moment of unbelievable grief and to stand there and keep that secret, what a twisted scene. And watch how they try to handle it. Dad recognized it and said, it's my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. And Jacob tore his own clothes. He put sackcloth on and mourned for his son for many days. And all of his sons and daughters came to comfort him. But he refused to be comforted. No, he said, in mourning will I go down to the grave to my son. So his father wept for him. Dad's like, I'm in the grave. You're not pulling me out of this one. All of his sons kept coming in to comfort him. You get that scene? Day after day, dad, old in years now, favorite son, shredded, ripped. Oh, the last moments have got to be going through his head. What kind of torture his boy must have gone through? Dad wasn't there to help. He's unconsolable. And the sons come in. Hey, dad, is there anything I can do for you? Oh, dad, is there anything you need? Is there anything I can do to make you feel better? Oh, you mean besides telling him the kid's not dead and you just sold him as a slave? Yeah. I mean, besides that. Seriously? They try to come in and comfort him. I look at this and go, oh, what a sick, twisted scene. What a bunch of idiots. And that's when the Bible goes, Chris, you're an idiot. How many times do we get to a place in life where we know this isn't what it's supposed to be? Oh, this doesn't have the joy. This doesn't have the peace. This isn't how we're supposed to be living. Oh, this is sad. Oh, things have got to be better. Is there anything I can do? You want to deal with your sin? I mean, anything besides that. Is there anything we can do to make this better? You want to come up front and confess and deal with the sin issue that's causing this? I mean, is there anything besides that that we can really take care of? Why don't you have the hard conversation? What if it's Naphtali? What if it's Dan? One of the boys have got to come in and say, Dad, this is going to be hard. Dad, you're going to want to kill us, and I get that. You got to sit down for this. Remember when we told you we found the coat and Joseph was dead? Okay, we hated him. I mean, we hated the kid. He's not dead. We sold him into slavery. He's probably still alive somewhere, but we know we took him down to Egypt. Oh, that's going to be a hard conversation. Oh, that's a conversation where Pop's going to go through the roof. Oh, that's a conversation where he's going to line up the boys, and I don't know what's going to happen. But I tell you, that's the only way to get away from the guilt and the shame. We are going to watch now an entire family. One dad will carry sorrow of thinking his littlest son got ripped away. Brothers are going to carry the guilt and conviction. For 20 years, we're going to watch this conflict play out. Because no one wants to stand up and go, here's the issue. You know, when I said I was here, I was actually here, and this is what I've been doing. You know when I said we got this much money? Where actually I've been doing this. You know when I said that I was going to do, well, this is what actually, oh, those are hard conversations. But I tell you, the only other choice is we can live and cover it up and it will always be with us. Or we can come to a place and go, we got to talk. You're going to hate me. You're going to kill me. No sharp objects right now. Just listen. Here's what's been going on. And it is the only way to deal with the situation. But human nature, them like me, probably like you, says, I'm going to live with the cover up. Well, then don't come around and say, how do we get the family back? How do we get joy back? How do we get the good old days again? You can't until you bring it out in the open. Because you're living with a sin issue. You're living with the cover up. Until it's done with. This is the life and sorrow you got. Last verse, meanwhile. Oh, if that doesn't bring a grin to your face, it should. Meanwhile, circle, highlight, underline. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Meanwhile, Joseph ends up at a general's house in Egypt as part of his household slave. Oh, church, listen. I don't know what cistern you're in. I don't know what pit you're in, and you know there's no way out. I don't know how bad the marriage is. I don't know how far water has gone under the bridge. I don't know how done it is. I don't know how broken it is. Some of you are in situations, you go, Chris, don't even go there. It's hopeless. It's done. No hope. There's no way out of this pit. It is done. Meanwhile. Some of you financially say, yeah, I couldn't get any worse. You don't understand the year we've had. Meanwhile, some of you in a health place right now saying, here's everything. It's one thing after another. And now we're in meanwhile. I love that there's meanwhiles in the Bible. We got a hopeless situation. Jacob, what do you need? What can help you? Nothing. There is no hope in my situation. Nothing. Meanwhile, God's at work. Oh, it's hundreds of miles away from where you can see. You have no idea what's going on in a different land. You have no idea what God is doing. But there is a meanwhile. It's one of the things that sets Christianity apart from any other world religion, any other belief, any other deity. We do not have a God that set things spinning in motion and took a long vacation. And he's distant, just going, one day I'll come back and see how it turns out. We do not have a God whose energy lives in the trees and the plants and every butterfly that flutters and every stream and brook. That's Jack. We do not have a God that sits back and says, you're on your own. Tell me how it turns out. We have a God that, because we are the pinnacle of his creation, we are made in his image, cannot, will not ever take his hands off of us, will not ever take his eyes off of us, will not leave us alone. Psalms 139. We have a God that, once you come to him in confession and accept him, the very Spirit of God dwells in our life. We have a God then that takes the absolutely worst of situation where there is no hope and says, meanwhile, meanwhile, in your mourning where there is nothing in life that's going to make sense, God says, I'm working. Oh, you can't see it. You're not going to get it right now, but I'm working. There's a visible hand of God that's called miracles, where we see God move or do. We expect them on a daily basis. They're few and far between. Most of us will live lives where we may never, ever experience that. But there is an invisible hand of God in the unseen realm that's called providence that works in the meanwhiles and says, I know you see your life and your situation and say there's no hope. And God grins and says, meanwhile, for those that want to trust and hold on to me, there is always a meanwhile, God says. And Jacob now has a choice. He can hold on to his cistern and his slavery. He can shake his fist at God. What happened to my dreams? What happened to the life I was supposed to have? You can blame it on your family. You can blame it on your father or your lack of father. You can blame it on your family of origin. You can blame it on others in life that have sabotaged you. Or you can let go of the anger and bitterness and hold on to God. And for the next 110 years of Joseph's life, oh, he may have messed up the beginning a little. For the next 110 years, we're going to find a guy in the midst of the worst of situations. Say, God, I'm simply going to trust there's got to be a meanwhile. Because I don't see it and I don't get it. And God says, print it. slow down the book of Genesis. This is one my people need to understand and learn from. And we've just entered the story. Four things I want to give you so you can walk away with something written down. And I know you note takers have been shaken. Doesn't he understand there's blanks on the paper? Four things, quickly. Number one, focusing on our dream is a great way to lose God's dream. You're like, Chris, how do I lose God's dream from my life? Do I make a pact with Satan? Is that how we lose God's dream? That's stupid. It's far, far easier to lose God's plan for your life. Just focus on your plan. Just focus on your dream. God shows up and says, Joseph, I'm going to do something great in your life. And Joseph runs out the door and goes, guys, guess what? I'm great. And God goes, you're an idiot. Let me do this one more time. Another dream. Joseph, I have plans to do something great in your life. And Joseph wakes up the next morning and goes, guys, guess what? I'm going to be great. And God goes, you need a well. You got to get over you, buddy. This is not how God's plan works. I don't think we get this. We have this American dream that God's will for our life is to make us great. God's will is to make us prosperous. God's will is to make us look good. What you need to do to get rid of God's plan for your life is just focus on yours. Have a God that's here to bless you instead of you serve him. You'll get rid of God's dream. Make sure that you follow a God that's here to set up your kingdom, and I promise you, you'll get far from his kingdom. Make sure you take all of your resources in life and make it about you, and I promise you, you can get rid of God's plan that's supposed to be about him. But because we're one of the wealthiest nations ever, we're the richest people that ever walked the face of the earth, we desire a God to bless us. We do not want a God to change us. I want a God to fulfill my dreams, not to change my dreams. And when we run out of the house and say, it's about me, my greatness, I promise you, you're going to head for a well. I don't think it had to be that way. I don't think it had to go that way. And some of you that know the story, no, Chris, this is God's way of getting him to Egypt. This is God's way of getting him into the palace. This is God's, no. This is the detour Joey had to take to empty himself of Joey. And I promise you, those of us that have been in pits and cisterns long enough, you can get over yourself in a hurry, can't you? When you get far from the hopes and dreams and success in life, you start to realize how insignificant you are in a hurry, don't you? And God said, buddy, I have a plan for you. But as long as you're making it about you, I can't go this way in your life right now. And I don't think it had to go to a well. I don't think it had to go to slavery. We're going to find a rape charge and imprisonment. I don't think it had to go that way. I think there's a lot better trail God could have taken him on. But he got so full of him, his kingdom, his plans. God had to empty himself of him to do his plan. And church, it's the same way. You want to get far from God's plan and God's dream, just follow yours. Because if your heart is anything like my heart, my dreams are what about makes Chris happy, Chris wealthy, Chris good. When we've been put here to make God look good, and those are going to come in conflict, and we can choose to hold on to our plans and our dreams, and he will do his best then to strip them from us. Or we can lay him down and join his dream. And that's where this goes. Because number two, godly people can still make God look bad. Boy, there may be just the history of Christianity in a nutshell. Godly people can still make God look bad. Giftedness is not an excuse for bad behavior. And giftedness does not equal spirituality. Kid, you got some dreams. You got God. God's doing something. You're a jerk. Your brothers hate you. I don't think that's the will of God. You see, as Christians, we can have God's plan. We can have the right plan, the right motives, and still be far from the will of God. And I got to tell you, church, we got two strikes against us. Our world knows a lot about Christianity. Hardly any of it's good. It's a laughingstock. We're known as, oh, you're the dreamers. Here comes those dreamers. You want to believe in a God and a loving God and follow some archaic set of rules? Way to be a dreamer. And they're going to do their best to kill that dream from their lives. Why? Christianity has deserved that. So much negative and hurt and harm has been done in the name of Christianity. And we got to carry that burden. We got to go out there with two strikes against us. We got to go out there and go, here's the truth, and you're all going to bow down. And you're, how far is that going to get you? We got to go out and show the love of God.
And we got to go out and build the relationships that love can travel over to earn the right to be heard. Because so much has been done in the name of Christianity that unfortunately we got an uphill battle. And Joseph doesn't know how to handle the truth. Joseph does not know how to handle God's dreams. And he turns the crowd against him. And I think it's going to make this a much longer, harder journey than God ever intended. Which brings us to how to do it. Number three. We can't have godly character without letting go of the coat and the crowd. That coat had to be ripped away. And once he's stripped of his coat, God can now work on his character. But God can't do anything with the person that walks around and thinks it's all about them. God can't do much with the person that says, hey, I'm here to be served. God can't do much with the person that says, people better be bowing. I just walked into the room. God said, buddy, we got to strip you of your coat to work on the character. And some of us have got to realize we cannot serve God and be loved by the crowd at every time. Now, if that's a both and, I always choose C, all the above. I want to love God and I want the crowd to love me. Chop, chop, end of story. But there's so many times in doing the right thing, we got to go against the crowd. Oh, for so many of you, it's great to come here and be church and the Christian. You got to go back and live on base. You got to take this back to the barracks. That's where we're going to find out how much of a Reuben we are or not. For some of you, you're going to go back tomorrow at the job site with the rest of those that are framing and drywalling. And that's when you got to realize, who am I going to be? Some of you are going back to the force. Some of you are going back to the classroom. Some of you are just going back to the family. And that's where we got to choose. I have this heart of God, a desire, but am I willing to say, hey, no longer here? Not on my watch. If there's a place of injustice, if there's someone that needs a hero, if there's a place that needs mercy, are we willing to stand up and go, not here, not now? And Reuben was close, but I think it was the crowd that kept him from stepping all the way up. And he lost that opportunity. And we got to examine our life and say, God, is it my pride, my ego? Is it my coat? Do I parade around expecting you to bless my life over me? Or am I here really to serve you with all that I have? And God, when it comes to the other 6.5 days outside these venues, am I willing to stand for the things that you stand for? Because lastly, we can't spiritually lead until we learn how to serve. And Joseph thought God's plans were about people serving him. And God said, buddy, slavery will help you with that. Slavery is a better definition of Christianity than having a crown on your head. And in Mark chapter 10, Jesus says, now church, listen, even the Son of God didn't come to be served, but to serve. Jesus didn't walk around with a crown telling people to kiss the ring. Jesus walked around looking for places to give and serve. And God says, if that's what I demand of my Son, why do you think you're better than him? You want to lead in the kingdom of God. You want to have impact. We better learn to serve, not desiring to be served. We better take the positions we've been given in life, whether it's parents, whether it's foreman, whether it's boss, whether it's part of the crew. We better take those positions in life and say, God, how do I serve out of this? Because Chris's heart wants to make everything about who bows down to me. Now, we can take our coats off ourselves. We can lay down our pride and ego. We can set our dreams down to pick up his. Or we can hold on to ours with all of our might. But God wants to make us like him. And he'll do his best to stripping us of our coat, of finding pits, of finding roadblocks. And I don't think it had to be that way. And God said, start the story here. 13 chapters. Here's how I desire to use people. Once they get out of the way from themselves, print it. That's good Bible. Father, may we continue to take these chapters and verses. As we slow down and look at one guy's life, may we continue to realize the way you dealt with people then is the way you deal with us today. God, may we just really examine ourselves. Is our American dream about us? Or is our American dream about how we take all that you've given us for the salvation of others? Is it about building our kingdom or yours? Is our goals financially set on your goals or ours? God, may we be people that gladly take all that you've given us and lay it down to be part of your plan. And God, if need be, may you strip us down and strip us away of our hopes and dreams in order to awaken us to the type of relationship you want with us. In Jesus' name, amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, just go online, www.northcoastchurch.com. Or you can come see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times of services. And now let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Chris.
As you go, we're going to pick it up there from next week. We're going to take a slight detour from Joseph and then get back to the story. Great stuff for all of us that go, man, I'm struggling with what God's doing or where he's at or what's going on with the meanwhile. I think this is going to just encourage the heck out of us over the next few weeks. The amazing thing about this is a God that says, I choose you. He cannot, will not take his hands, his eyes off of you. The only thing he desires is for you to come back and walk with him. Isn't that amazing? Pick it up from there next week. Until then, turn around, greet Dad's favorite. They're right there. See you next week.